Okay, welcome to the Rabbeinu B'chai Shir Parshas Hazino. Blast from the past, right? It feels just like this past Shabbos that we were lighting Hazino. Want to focus really on two pieces tonight. First, to take a look at the Rabbeinu B'chai Perek Lamed Beis Pasuk Tesvav, where the Rabbeinu B'chai talks about a name which is attached to Klal Yisrael, which really first comes up in Parshas Hazino, and then is repeated in Vesos HaBracha, the name Yeshurun. Right? We say the davening every day, Me'avoscha Shohafto Oso, because you love Klal Yisrael so much, Korosa Shmo Yisrael V'Yeshurun. So we find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu changed the name of Yaakov to Yisrael, but where does Yeshurun come from? What does Yeshurun mean exactly? So the Rebbe B'chai writes at the Pasuk by Yishma Yeshurun Vayivah, Yeshurun, Klal Yisrael became fat and they kicked against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is again Perek Lamed Beis Pasuk Tesvav. Lo Nikru Yeshurun Ad Ata Shikra Moshe Rabbeinu Olav HaShalom B'Shem Zed. This is the first time that Klal Yisrael is ever called by that name Yeshurun. Yitachin Lefarish Ki Kira'am Kain Lechesronam Kedela holy chom ulahachli mom, lefisha shame asehu shame hamaila vakovod. Why is it that all of a sudden here, for the first time in Chumash, Moshe Rabbeinu calls Klal Yisrael by the name Yeshurun? So he says, ironically, Yeshurun is a name which denotes the great stature of Klal Yisrael. And in a sense, precisely because it denotes the great stature of Klal Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu is mentioning it as a put-down, in a sense. In other words, you, who are the Madrega of Yeshurun, and should know better, nonetheless rebelled against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayishman Yeshurun Vayivah. You, of all people, with all the covet that Yeshurun brings with it, should have been, you know, more faithful to the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does Yeshurun mean? V'nigzar min ashurenu al shem hori'iyo. Right? When Bilam HaRasha at the end of Parshas Balak describes how he sees the end of days, he says, ashurenu v'lo ato. I see it, ashurenu v'lo ato, but it isn't here yet. I see the Biyat HaMoshiach, but way off in the future. So the word ashurenu is the word yeshuru. Very interesting, right? Offhand, he would have asked us, we would have said, Yeshurun is related to the word Yashar, straight, right? So the Rabbeinu B'chai says, no, right? It's related to the word Lashur, to look at something, to gaze at something. So, what does that mean in this context? Al-Shem Ha-Re'iya Shirol Kovar Ashkina Ayin Ba'ayin B'matan Torah. Yeshurun hints at the idea that Klal Yisrael saw God, Kivyachol, face to face, by Matan Torah. Right? They saw the glory of Hashem like a consuming fire at the top of the mountain. Right? That's why Yeshurun is mentioned in this context over here, because the Shiras Hazinu starts off recounting Matan Torah. Yisovavenu Yevonaneu. Yisovavenu, says the Targum, Klal Yisrael were set up around, surrounding the mountain where the Kavod HaShechina was. Yevonaneu, God instilled Bina, understanding and wisdom into the people. How so? By giving them the Torah. So at Matan Torah, we became Yeshurun. That's when we acquired that name, because Yeshurun means those who were Zochet to see something that no other human being was able to see. We were able to see the glory of God at Maimed Har Sinai. And now, after seeing the glory of God at Maimed Har Sinai, Vayishman Yeshurun Vayivot, you guys who saw the Kavod Hashem, so you had, you know, a little bit extra, and then you said, oh, we don't need HaKadosh Baruch Hu anymore, that's really a chutzpah. You know, if you had experienced Matan Torah, okay, Mela. But for people who experience Matan Torah, to rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu in such a fashion, that's really the height of chutzpah. V'chein lemato, achar shehizkir Torah tzivalanu, hizkir miyad vayi b'shurun melech. Right, we have to put in Parshas Vesos HaBracha in some way or another, right? So in Parshas Vesos HaBracha, we have the famous pasuk, Tarav Sivalanu Moshe Marasha Kihilas Yaakov. Vayhi Vishurin Melech. Right, the continuation of the next pasuk is that God, again, different ways to interpret the pasuk, but one way, it seems the way the Rabbeinu B'chai is interpreting it, is that God was a king in the midst of Yeshurun. When? After Torah Sivalanu Moshe. In other words, God gives us the Torah, so then we become Yeshurun by Yeshurun Melech. In other words, that same connection between Matan Torah and the name Yeshurun is brought out in Parshas Vizos HaBrachos, says Rabbeinu B'chaye, the same way that is being brought out over here. V'gav chasimas birchoso omar ein kokel Yeshurun. Right? At the very end of the brachos of Moshe Rabbeinu, again in this week's parasha, Vizos HaBracha, ein kokel Yeshurun. There is none like God Yeshurun. Klomar, mimasher oisa v'sinai, yecholim atem lo yiro lo shein komo. Why the usage of the term Yeshurun over here? Because you Yeshurun, i.e., the people who stood at Har Sinai and received the Torah and saw the Kavod Hashem, you are uniquely poised to be able to say Ein Kokel, that there's nobody like God. Anybody else who wasn't at Har Sinai, you know, they can make such a statement, but they're less in a position to be able to back that up. You stood, you saw how HaKadosh Baruch Hu, again according to the Medrash, ripped open the Shiva Rikim and showed you that there's nobody else like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's no one else like God. So if you're being Yeshurun, the people that stood at Har Sinai and saw the glory of God, that enables you to say Ein Kokel, right? There's nobody like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? So Yeshurun, again, emphasized by Rabbeinu B'chai over and over again, is about this idea of Ashurenu, of, you know, the unique experience of Klal Yisrael in being able to see God kivyachol at Maimon Har Sinai. Meaning, the first time that the term is ever used is in a very negative context. Vayishman Yeshurun Vayivot, right? So why use the term Yeshurun over there? Because it's a criticism. You saw the Kod Hashem and Har Sinai, and you were still led astray by a little bit of Gashmius. You know, if you hadn't seen the Kod Hashem. Alright, so says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'd be more understanding. But given what you saw, how could you reject him so thoroughly?
By the ego, he's saying.
You know, in the context, I think it means to the later sins in Eretz Yisrael.
So I learned
that
what about Acher? Acher was so much.
Right.
He got up there, he saw, and yet he used that analogy against
him. Right. So in other words, you know, if you misuse Torah, it can come back to bite you.
Right.
So you know, we see that over here as well.
Saw Hashem or heard Hashem?
I'm sorry?
Saw Hashem.
Now again, saw in quotes, meaning they saw something.
Can't really see.
Right. They saw something.
Yeah.
They saw something more than the average person is able to see. You can't see Hashem really. But in other words, they saw something extraordinary. Whatever that is,
the glory
exactly.
of God.
Yeah, the glory of God.
Did they see that then at the Kriyas Yam Suf? It says, "Mash Roshim Kal Yom."
I think whatever. I mean, Kriyas Yam Suf was a big deal also, but I think it still can't compare it to Maimon Har Sinai. I mean, that's
sensing the same intensity as seeing. Isn't a gaze you just sort of look off the direction and you see something? You don't actually really see. You see something, but not as intense.
Right. So the truth is, but that is a perfect description of somebody seeing the glory of God, because by definition.
But it's a superficial seeing. It's not a real seeing.
Okay, but that's just because no one can really, really, really see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So in other words, you know, they caught a glimpse of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever a human being is able to see, which is still light years beyond what anyone else, you know, who wasn't at Maimon Har Sinai, would be able to say. I'm sorry?
I would say
right. They see the back of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
You don't see a tzaddik more able to see things, you know, like, I don't know, you know, like, Eliezer or whatever, when was escorting. What do you see? So, like, they weren't searching whatever they were. The whole thing, you know, they didn't see.
Right. So, again, we don't really understand what they saw, but they saw something. You know, there was something there that was significant.
Right.
This whole idea is par for the course in Shiras HaZinu, where God is giving Musar to the people and telling them how they're going to sin. V'yishyamru espi Hashem, that they are going to eventually go against God's words. V'yishkechu chasadov harabim shasoi mohem, they will forget His many kindnesses which He did for them. V'lachach kron v'yomahu shlosha pe'omim b'shem hanichbad hazeh. Because, and for that reason, you know, three times in the course of the Shiras HaZinu, he uses the term, or three times on this last day of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, he uses this exalted term, Yeshurun. Ki aparshios devekos, because HaZinu and Vizos HaBracha are really, in a sense, one parsha, they're continuations. They are all an expression of what Moshe Rabbeinu told the Jewish people on the day of his death. He told them Shiras HaZinu, Vizos HaBracha, and then he gave them a bracha. In other words, we should read it as all more or less happening, you know, within a short period of time. It's all happening on one day. Right? So three times he uses this term Yeshurun. V'akol oyevim yomoso kasher yizkarti, as I mentioned, this all happened on the day of his death. V'yomar ato v'yishman Yeshurun v'yiva v'yirmoz lohem ki am kemoso nikro Yeshurun. How could it be that a nation that saw the glory of God could have sinned in such a grievous way? So again, this taich of the name Yeshurun, a very unique approach that Rabbi Bechaye has, tying it in to the whole idea of the Jewish people being able to see, and you know, having been able to have been shown incredible things at Maimed Har Sinai. I want to take a look at a somewhat longer Rabbi Bechaye, Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Mem Gimel.
In the plain sense of the word, does it apply? Yashar? Does it apply? Or
so he doesn't touch it that way. There are others who say that Yashar, that Yeshurun is related to the word Yashar, right? But he Bechlau does not touch it that way. In other words, he sees the Pashat of Pshat of Yeshurun as related to the word of Ashurenu. Okay, as we said. In
about the country of Ashur.
Interesting. I don't know how that fits in. I don't know how that fits in.
He became rich. He became kings.
Right, maybe. So this is a Rabbi Bechaye on Pasuk Mem Gimel.
He did the Shuva and Yom Kippur.
Oh, Ashurenu?
Ashur.
Oh yeah, the Anshe Ninveh.
Right, so then right. Maybe that's what it's saying. They saw the light. And
they saw the light. Interesting. Maybe you know, they saw the right thing to do.
Yeah,
could be. The Rebbe Bechaye is on pasuk Mem Gimel, but he's really commenting on a pasuk a few lines earlier, pasuk Lamites. Ruato pasuk Lamites says, "See now, ki ani anihu, I am Him. I am Hashem." The Ein Elohim Imodi, there's no other God together with me. Ani omis va'achaye, I kill and I revive. Mochavsti v'ani erpo, I wound and I heal. V'ein miodi matzil, and no one can be saved from my hand. The Gemara Sanhedrin quotes this pasuk as one of the hints to the idea of Chiyas HaMeisim, of resurrection that appears in the Torah. Because what does it mean? Ani omis va'achaye. So one way to read it might mean, I kill Reuven and I bring Shimon to life. But says the Gemara, no, it doesn't likely mean that, because keep reading, Mochatzti v'ani erpo, I wound and I heal. It doesn't make sense to wound, you know, to say I wound Reuven but I can heal Shimon. You can wound and heal the same person. So ani omis v'achaye in context also means, I kill a person, but I bring him back to life. That same person, not somebody else. So says the Gemara in Sanhedrin, this is one of the psukim in Chumash that hints to the idea of Tchiyas HaMeisim if you just know how to read it properly.
But it's God's choice, what He wants to do.
Right, exactly. But the point is, Tchiyas HaMeisim is never really mentioned explicitly in the Torah. So how do we know that there is such a thing as the resurrection of the dead? So this is one of the psukim that the Gemara quotes. You know, you see from here that there is a concept of resurrection. Ani omis, V'achaye, I kill, but I revive. Not I make, you know, I kill this one and I bring this one to life. I kill this one and I bring this one back to life. So commenting on that, again, it's in a section, you know, maybe about a third of the way into the piece on Mem Gimel, on the Shevel edition. It is on page Tuf Ayin Hay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines down.
No, like,
yeah.
You translate it on this skill. It sounds like, you know, Shul has a very negative connotation.
All right, I render someone life deprived. Doesn't that sound much better now?
Not thought it's just the essence of life,
right?
No, but I like unjustified. Regression takes another way towards his life. Is the shot because it has to start with whatever.
Okay, all right. We know what we mean. In other words, I empty out the life from the person, right? Whatever it happens to be. Okay. Yeah. From that which the pasuk says, I won't translate it. Ani omis va'achaye. Ani hu shehimati es Yisrael v'ani achaye elsa. I am the one who has again killed the Jewish people, but I can bring them back to life. Mikan darshu razal inyan tchias hameisim. From here, Chazal learn out the idea of tchias hameisim, of resurrection. V'chein amru. And they say, Ma mechitza refua be'echad, just as, again, as we said, the continuation of the pasuk, Mochatzti vani erpa, I wound and I heal, just as in context that obviously means the same person, I wound Chaim, but I heal Chaim. Af miso tchia be'echad, so too, death and life, ani o misva achaye, means the same person. V'hu ke'inyin shekosu Hashem meinis u'machaye, morid she'ov ayoal. As the pasuk says, in Shmuel, God takes away life, and he brings back life. He brings down to the grave, and he raises up. Meaning, Marit Shaul Vayoal, right? He takes down to the grave, but he takes the person out of the grave. How do you take the person out of the grave? Tchias Hameisim. Vakavod le Razal Sheomru, Malachis Rafua Beecha Lufish Lo Omer Hakasuv Emchatz Vani Erpa Shoyu B'Mashma Emchatz LeRuven Berpa LeShimon. When we talk Shishono V'Omer Mochatzti. Right? This is a technical point. He says, you know, when the pasuk says mochatzti, v'ani erpa, mochatzti is lashon avar, it's past tense. Ani erpa is future tense, lashon osid. So it means the one whom I wounded, I will heal. Right? So that's how the Gemara comes to his drasha. Okay, minor point. V'da. Here comes one of the major points I want to focus on. V'da. Ki rabim yismahu v'yishalu. Many ask the question. Lava lo nizkar inin chiyas hameisim b'tar b'feresh. How come the Torah never really spells out the belief in chiyas hameisim? Meaning, okay, I can read the pasuk, and if I read between the lines, it's talking about chiyas hameisim. Chiyas hameisim is one of the Rambam's 13 principles of faith. Don't you think that the Torah should just kind of like put in a big banner, like neon lights somewhere in Chumash? By the way, God will one day resurrect the dead? I mean, if it's really a principle of our faith, it should be like very black on white, you know, very spelled out so that there's no confusion about it whatsoever. How come, you know, how come you have to come and you have to move your thumb and, you know, no. Why isn't it more explicit that there's a concept of Tchias HaMeisim? Kivan shu ikar gadol pino gadol of Torah. It's a major foundation of Torah. V'kama parashiyos haTorah yarech boi makosov yichbal oson ve'ibon tzarech kol kach. I mean, there are a lot of things in the Torah that Zohar spends a lot of time talking about, which we would not think are so essential. Again, everything in the Torah is essential, but at least superficially. I mean, if you would ask me, I would think it's more important to know that there's the thing of Tchias HaMeisim as it is to know the genealogy of the kings of Edom. Right? The Torah spends a lot of time talking about the genealogy of the kings of Edom. It doesn't really come out black and white to talk about Tchias HaMeisim. It seems a little bizarre, says Rabbeinu Bechaye. V'im kein, lama yiksar akosu v'inyaz, yikatsar akosu v'inyazer, v'imsor ikar galda l'remes mu'ar. Why should the Torah take such a basic principle as Tchias HaMeisim and relegate it to an off-handed hint, the way we have. Uchuvas hadavar, the answer is, I've mentioned this already numerous times. The way of the Torah is, by design, to speak briefly about things which are supposed to be very hidden. If you're not supposed to know a lot about it, the Torah doesn't spend a lot of time talking about it. The more esoteric something is, the Torah speaks about it less. When the Torah does speak about it, it's through hints and in shorthand. That's true if you look in the account of the Maisa Bereishis, when it says Yehi Or, I mean, that light was an incredible light. Tell us a little bit more about it. What was it? It was an Or. What does that mean exactly? I mean, how was the Or produced? There was no sun at that point. Don't ask too many questions. Let's go on to the next pasuk. Because obviously that information is esoteric. By contrast, on the third day of creation, where it talks about the trees and the plants and everything like that, there's relatively speaking an arichas in the Torah. Eitz pri, osa pri, lumineo, you know, asher zarovo ala aretz. There's a lot discussed over there because, you know, we all understand trees and grass and stuff like that. But the primordial light, you know, the or hagonos that was set aside for the tzaddikim is something that's really beyond most of our comprehension.
But at least with light, it mentioned light. It wasn't a remez to something, a mission from a son or whatever you want to call it. Tchias HaMeisim, it doesn't even say those words, Tchias HaMeisim. So there's a difference.
Right, so
it's more Nelom than Nelom.
It's more Nelom, right.
Yeah, it's right. Extremely.
Right. 100%. I mean, I think Rabbeinu Bechai would argue, if you know how to read our pasuk, it's not so Nelom, but you're right, it's not really black on white at all. Why is it not black on white? Because the truth is, the protim, the details of how Tchias HaMeisim works, are beyond our comprehension. I mean, look, do we really understand how it's going to work? Who's going to come back out? All kind of machloksim and the Rishonim, exactly how Tchias HaMeisim is going to work. The evidence is we don't really know. I mean, we have a belief.
But mention it at least.
Well, he would say that this is a mention.
Okay.
This is a mention. It's mentioned. You know, you wanna know more about it? I don't want, you know, Torah doesn't want to mention it too much at length to tell you that this is a very esoteric manner and matter, and that the average person is not really going to be able to understand it. Right? And he goes on, David only speaks about the Or very, very briefly, talks a little bit more about different parts of creation. Right, so that's point number one. To the extent to which the ideas of Tchias HaMeisim are really ultimately beyond our comprehension, the Torah mentions it, but in a very backhanded fashion. You should know there is such a thing, but don't spend a lot of time trying to delve into it because it really, you know, the details are beyond our comprehension. So Sva'od Acheres, I'm just skipping a few lines to get to the other major point. Shekola Yehudim Shebatara HaNe'amarim Al Yidei Moshe. The truth is, the Torah promises many great things for those who do the will of Hashem. But they're all physical promises. There's no mention in the Torah of an Olam Haba. There's no mention in the Torah of the immortality of the soul. No mention of what happens in a more spiritual realm. Again, another question which occupies many of the Mefarshim on the Torah. Says Rabbeinu Bechai, you know why? Because the Torah is not interested in talking about the ultimate reward for tzaddikim. It only talks about the reward that we get for doing mitzvahs for one reason alone. The Torah wants to kedei lekboa b'lev amitas nevuaso shel Moshe. The Torah wants to convince Moshe Rabbeinu's audience, the Jews of that time, that his nevuah was true. So how do you prove that your nevuah is true? You have to present a reward which you will see happen in your lifetime. If I tell you the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu is true, because if you follow Torah, you'll get Olam Haba, there's no way to demonstrate that while we're still alive. Right? The Torah is only giving promises which can be demonstrated. In other words, if the Torah says, follow the will of Hashem, and God will make the rain come down and the crops grow, and you will grant peace in the land. These are things which we can test in this world and say, hey, I guess the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu is correct. Right? That's the only interest the Torah has. The Torah is not, just by taish, the Torah is not a book of theology. If the Torah was a theology book, so the Torah would tell us what we believe about Olam Haba. But the Torah, Shebiksav at least, is not entirely a book of theology. When the Torah makes promises, it's only for one specific purpose, to enable the people of that generation to see the truth of the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu. The fact that there are other promises which the Torah makes about Olam Haba and Tchiyas HaMesim and things that are going to happen, you know, either in the distant future or, you know, in a life beyond our own life, you know, in an afterlife or something of that nature, these are things that the Torah Shebiksav is not focusing on. We gain those theological principles from the Torah Shebaal Peh.
So does Rabbi Chai really believe that the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu that saw Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah has to be, granted they were nichshal, or that's besides the point, but that they have to be shown that they're going to get land and peace? I mean, they've seen it all. They've seen more than most people ever seen in their lives.
Right.
And they needed a war to say that this is your sechar in this world, so we don't need to pull in the next one?
Right. Well, some of the things, I should modify what I said before. Some of those things are only going to be fulfilled not in that generation, but in subsequent generations. Meaning, you know, the fact that they'll come into Eretz Yisrael and they'll be granted the land, and there'll be peace, and there'll be rain when they need it. Those are things which the truth is that generation didn't need. They were in the Midbar, you know, they had the Mon and Anoni HaKovet and all of that. But, you know, the future generations residing in Eretz Yisrael should be able to point demonstratively to something and say, oh, you see that we believe in the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's, you're right. That was really
from the Nevuah that makes me believe it, Kam Kain Olam Haba. Because if one is true, then the rest of the other thing is
wrong. Right, but in other words, there isn't a focus on the Torah and Olam Haba. The focus is on those things that are proof.
That I can see.
Right, those things that I can see. Right? When we talk Hayu'udim Arheim HaGufnim, again, really exactly the way Shelley said, from these physical promises, Yis'amisu Eslam Ho'inyonim HaSichlim HaNe'lomim. If we see the fulfillment of the physical promises, we will come to believe in the truth of the spiritual promises, which are not as easily demonstrable. Right? That's why the Torah really, although it talks about Tchiyas HaMesim, it does so in the most brief and, you know, cursory of fashions, because that's not really the focus.
But there's a problem with that, too. Yeah. If my whole concept or known the existence of Olam Haba is a remez,
right,
that is a lot different between a Kol, a Moshe Rabbeinu telling me, if I keep the mitzvahs, I will have peace, I will be Yorish Eretz Israel. I mean, it's so different. Moshe Rabbeinu is giving me a basis of fact,
right,
that I can rely upon and say, I see, and if it doesn't happen, then I know I'm mistaken or right, it doesn't exist. But at least it's a mamash, something real. With Olam Haba, there's no real in the sense of someone telling me there is an Olam Haba.
Right.
You have remez.
Right.
And so then how do you expect, even if you're a mamin, that it's, that, you know, if you do mitzvahs and all that, all the things, and that's double mamash. How's the jump to something that's just a remez? How do I know it is a remez? Or maybe someone is seeing into things
right,
that are not there.
Right. Now, so I think it's an excellent question. I think ultimately the answer lies in appreciating the relationship between Torah Shebiksav and Torah Shebaal Peh. Meaning, I think we have a tendency to kind of look at the quote unquote real Torah as a Torah Shebiksav, and then Torah Shebaal Peh is kind of like a commentary, like it, you know, it fills in a gap here, a gap there. You know, it says that means these black boxes, you know. But in other words, the Ikar Torah is the Torah Shebiksav, and then the Torah Shebaal Peh is commentary. If you look at it from that perspective, so the absence or near absence of any mention of Olam Haba and Tchiyas HaMesim and Torah Shebiksav is very, very troubling. But let's look at it differently. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Klal Yisrael and he teaches them the Torah, which is primarily a Torah Shebaal Peh, an oral tradition. And then a fraction of that Torah Shebaal Peh he chooses to write down. Not that necessarily the most important things are being written down, but the things that were most important to write down are being written down. And again, the criteria for what's most important to write down may not be the same criteria of what's ultimately the most important, right? You know, some things need to be written down, some things are best passed down orally. But, you know, so it's not, if you said, right, if you're on a desert island, you know, found the Sefer Torah, and you tried to work your way backwards and figure out Judaism from there, it would be disturbing to discover that Tchias HaMesim is really given short shrift. But that's not the way it was. Moshe Rabbeinu revealed the Torah to Klal Yisrael, Rubo Baal Peh, in the words of the Gemara. Most of the Torah is Torah Shebaal Peh. A fraction was written down, because this fraction that was written down, there's a purpose in writing down specifically these things, either to help us remember the Torah Shebaal Peh, or to drive home certain basic ideas. But, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu was sitting there and telling Klal Yisrael about Olam Haba, about Tchias HaBesim, all of these concepts Moshe Rabbeinu was revealing to the people. But again, for certain reasons, he chose not to write them down, perhaps because the very esoteric nature of these issues didn't lend themselves well to be written down. But if you have the oral tradition, and that's the Ikkar, so it's less disturbing that the Torah Shebiksav doesn't really speak about it as much.
There's allusions if a person studies the right way, like the Chama Leibowitz, when I popped into a class at Hebrew University, in Parshas Noach, if someone commits suicide, they're going to be punished for it. If it's only this world,
right,
then how could you be punished for it? There's a world right afterwards, the Olam Haba, where you're going to be
right
punished.
Right. Yeah, so
you're the right way.
Right, it's under the surface, certainly. Okay. Zetam halomas inyan tchias hamesim. This is the reason for the hiding of the idea of tchias hamesim. Gam inyan olam habash l'niska v'tov v'perish gam ki v'tov chalom osa. The same is true for the fact that the Torah doesn't really mention olam haba, ki ha-Torah nitno lahamon. The Torah was given to the masses. V'das hamon lo yochilo inyanim hasichliyim. Most people can't handle these very esoteric things. This is back to his first explanation. People can't handle these very esoteric things. Olam haba, tchias hamesim, and the like. V'chein timsor ha-Torah Osam El Remes Koton Vidak Yavu Hamon Alav Yochira Maskil Yisorera Alav. That's why the Torah puts something in a Remes. A Remes, the discerning person picks up on, but the masses pass over and they don't chap it. Okay, so that's an important piece in the Rabbeinu Bechaya. Then he goes straight into something else which is not related, but equally important. Vim Taskil Bimilos Sisra Ve'u'ato Ki. If you take the last word of Pasuk Lamed Ches, which is Sisra, and you continue reading the Pasuk Lamed Ches, Re'u Ata Ki, and you take the last letters of those words and read them backwards, Timso Bo Hashem HaMiyuchad Rashum L'Mafreya. The last word, the last letters of Sisra, Re'u Ata Ki, is Yud Kei Vav Kei backwards. What's the inyan of Yud Kei Vav Kei backwards? This he's spoken about before. Ubal Yirmoz Al Midas Hadin HaMasucha Al Ha'umos Bizman HaGeula. The Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is the Midah of Rachamim, when spelled backwards becomes the Midah of Din. When you reverse the Shem Havaya becomes the Midah of Din. At the end of the Shiras Hazino, Moshe Rabbeinu was describing how God is going to bring judgment against the nations of the world who oppose Klal Yisrael. So we see that in the words themselves, as the Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei is spelled backwards. For who she is giving me out the sochez b'mishpat yodi ashiv no kam litzorai v'yomar ashkir chitzai midam v'charbi. Fine. V'tim tzoeim batoro mibreishis al enei chol yiso shmona osor shemos b'seder. This is very important, Rabbeinu Bechai, because he sums up some of the observations that he's made throughout Chumash. He's getting to the end of Chumash, so he wants to kind of give a summary statement. Says Rabbeinu Bechai, there are 18 times in the Gantz Chumash where the Shem Hashem is spelled out in this fashion. Bein Berashi Tevos Uvesofon, Bein L'mafreya Berashi Tevos Uvesofon. Right? Whether in the beginning of words, you know, Yud Kei Vav Kei, the beginning of words, or at the ends of words, or going forwards, or going backwards. Right? And those are four different combinations. The beginning of the words, the end of the words, forwards, and backwards. There are 18 total times where the Shem Hashem is spelled out in some way or another throughout Chumash. Since this is the last one, I figured I would do you a favor and list off the 18 so that you'll know how to find them next time you go through the Chumash, you know, even without me. Kashmura and Kaseda. There are four that are in order. Arba b'Rashi Tevos, b'Arba b'Sofei Tevos. Four in the beginning of the words, four in the end of the words. Yom Hashishi v'Yichulu Hashamayim. That's a famous one because we say it in Kiddush. Yehuda Hotsi'uha v'Sisareif Hi. Then Yidaber Hu v'Gam Hine. Yodo Achazoka Uzro Al Hanetuya. Espinei Hashem v'Yishalchenu Hashem. Li Mashimo Ma Noki Yiye Leveso Shono Mi Yale Lonu Hashomaimo. Right? In other words, there are eight in total that are Yudke Vavke reading forwards, either by looking at the first letters or by looking at the last letters. Vasara Hemla Mafreya. If you do the math, there are 10 times where the Shem Hashem is spelled backwards. Each time where the Shem Hashem is spelled backwards is a Midas Hadin. Eluhein Hashomayim Misham Hafitzam Hashem. This is the first one that he mentioned. Right by the Migdal Bavel, there's the Shem Hashem backwards. Ki nimducha aleha Midas Hadin lefishachotu v'kitzus nitios. Heim of hachamoreim heim yotsu by the Shvatim. When they leave the city and the Gevia is placed into the sack of Binyamin, so there also, there's a Midas Hadin against them because of the Mechiras Yosef.
On that
way, say
one by the
Mabel? No. Ha'am v'hayahu yihiyeh. Kinimtucha Moshe al Asiruth. Right? When Moshe Rabbeinu refuses to go down to Mitzrayim, so the Midas Hadin again is stretched out against him. Chen ksi v'ichar af Hashem b'Moshe. Arzo vayishlicheu, arzo vayihi. Ki os hamatash nepach lenocha shoye behipuch os yashem hagodo. When Moshe Rabbeinu throws down his staff and it becomes a nachash, the ability to take the matah and turn it into a nachash is the reversal of the osios of the Shem Hashem. Hashem v'nachnu ma ki, when the people ask for meat, right, and are punished terribly, that's also the Midas Adin is against the people. Right, in the description of the Mishkan, and the, specifically the western side of the Mishkan, there's the Shem Hashem spelled backwards. Ki Ashchina Shemidas Hadin Hayu B'Mayrov. The Shchina, which he says is the Midas Hadin, was in the western end of the Mishkan and later the Beis Hamikdash. So in other words, Midas Hadin is in the west. Halavim v'Achanos HaMishkan Yakimu Halavim v'Azor Karev Yumas. Right? In other words, if the Levium someone who comes near to the Mishkan is going to die, the Koach of the Mishkan kills someone who comes near it improperly. Talking in the Parsha of Sota, the Sota is clearly subject to the Midas Hadin. Shama v'zaro yorishena vo amaleki. Right? In the parsha of the Meraglim, you have a Shem Hashem backwards. And finally here, where the Shem Hashem is backwards to speak about the Midas Hadin, which is stretched out against the nations of the world, who have risen up against the Jewish people, who are going to be punished at the end of time.
I mean, what do you say? Don't you find it odd that there isn't anything but a Mabul?
So obvious that Din came down.
I don't know.
You don't need it. You don't have to spell it out.
Right, maybe. Maybe that's the word. You know, it's... I don't know. It's a good point. I don't know. Maybe it's like Rosh Lomo Zalman suggests, that it's so obvious that it doesn't need to be written. The kids are here. This is an important Rabbeinu B'chai. You can bookmark this, so to speak. It contains, this summary of the 18 different times in Chumash where you have the Shem Hashem spelled out either forwards or backwards, and a summary of how the concept of the Midas HaDin, when it's spelled out backwards, applies in each case.
Is there any significance to the number 18?
Yeah, you would think so, right? You know, the 18, Chai, right? You know, the Shem Hashem is Chai times in the, you know, in the Chumash.
They don't like it, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does din. It's not like a human king. He does din. It's actually, it's for the purpose of Chai.
Right, there's a Chai in well, that, you know, 100%, very, very good.
Something relevant that, from a minute, the baby from the Chasam Sofer, usually by Kiddush, by Yechul HaShemayim.
Right.
But many people know that they add on the Pasuk, they are like, Kosher for Hintel by Yehu Avi Boker.
Right.
So they have the whole Pasuk, because therefore you have the Shem Hashem of Hashem's Rachamim. Yom HaShishi.
Right.
So you have the whole Pasuk. Do some people just start off with Yom HaShishi?
Yeah, most people start with Yom HaShishi, you know,
Vayichulu HaShemayim.
Anyway, right, no, so Yom HaShishi, Vayichulu HaShemayim is to get the Shem Yud Kevav.
They don't want to break the Pasuk.
Right, no, so some people start by Yer Vayivok. Okay, so we'll wish everybody a Gemar Chasima Tova. Just in terms of our scheduling, for those who are here over the Yantav Simchas Torah, Leil Simchas Torah between Mincha and Ma'ariv, we'll have a Shir Rabbeinu B'chai and Parshas Vezos HaBrocha, you know, to be mashlim the Seder. And Bezos Hashem, starting really Parshas Noach, there isn't really a week of Parshas Bereishis this year, but starting the Wednesday of Parshas Noach, we'll start Bezos Hashem learning the Kli Yakar over the course of this coming year. We're trying to get Svarim of Kli Yakar, you know, to hopefully they're not too Yakar, the Svarim, you know, but we'll get a Svarim of Kli Yakar for people to be able to purchase if people are interested. And Be'ez Hashem, we should have a Gemar Chasima Tov and Bizocha to continue to learn many different Mefarshim together.